Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host, and with me are my two dear friends, Pamela Chaddock and Chuck Thurston. Hi, you guys.
Hey,
hi. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Chuck.
Yeah. Well, our friends Andre and Marvin are with family, and which is wonderful. Andre just had a new grandchild, which I think we said last week, but he gets to be there with them, and he's enjoying his time with his daughter and son-in-law and their beautiful new baby girl. So, yay!
Yeah.
He sent us some pictures yesterday. It was so great to see this beautiful child in the world from such a dear, sweet boy. She's a lucky kid. She has a grandpa like Andre, so that's what I know.
For sure. Yeah, that's true. Somebody to answer all her questions.
Yeah, exactly. He's a great girl dad, too. He's already raised two girls, so he's got that part down. But, yeah, so it's just us three this week, and again, like last week, and we've been discussing mind, paper 9, relation of the infinite spirit to the universe. And section 4 last week was the absolute mind, and this week we're going on to the ministry of mind. And mind is just such a fabulous concept in the Urantia book. It's one of those things like that the deeper you dig into it, the more compelling it becomes, the more interesting it is, you know, what mind is really, you know.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You go from
compelling
the place where you
a
think
good
it's
term,
your.
Yes.
Yeah, it's compelling. It's like, okay, so I thought I knew what mind meant. I thought I understood that, but no, you know, I went to. Go ahead, Chuck.
No. Well, hold your thought. Yeah, I was just going to say I really like how the Urantia book introduces the idea of a mind arena.
Yeah.
Mind is spoken of as an arena. I just think that's a very interesting way of experiencing mind or approaching mind, because it really is like that.
Yeah, it really is. I was at a retreat a couple weeks ago, and somebody said, Esther Wood actually said, the seven adjutants, spirit, mind, spirits are our mind. I thought that was great. And a lot of people said, wow, I never thought of it that way, you know. But that is a whole being type of phenomenon. It's not just, you know, your brain.
Yeah.
Or even just your intellect. I mean, I always think, you know, I always remember that Jesus once said to Nathaniel, what manner of thinking is going on in your heart? And now there's been a great deal of research between the heart, you know, that the heart-mind connection, they call it. But also, my our good friend Mo always will say, let me check with my gut. you know, so there's another connection there. And if we think more of the seven adjutants as being our whole mind and access to our whole mind, I think we might find that a lot more effective way to approach our decisions, say, you know, and our problems and how all of these things play into to us understanding any issue that we have in front of us. So, yeah, it's interesting because next section six is the mind gravity circuit. And then universe reflectivity is section seven, personalities of the infinite spirit. This is actually a long paper. It's one of the longer papers.
It is.
So, yeah, it has eight sections, and they're all really deep and amazing sections. So, but the ministry of mind. So any thoughts about what we were talking about last week, the absolute mind, anything we want to recap?
Well, there's a lot there.
There's so much I know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the fifth paragraph of that last section, we get the flow of reality, if I'm remembering right, from spirit to mind to matter. Where they say the cosmic force, which is like the material level, responds to mind, even as the cosmic mind responds to spirit. Spirit is divine purpose, and spirit mind is divine purpose in action. That alone, that could be like a little sign put up on the wall, put up on your wall.
Right.
Spirit is divine purpose, and spirit mind is divine purpose in action.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that. Energy is thing, mind is meaning, spirit is value. I mean, that sense too. That's a whole revelation right there in itself. I mean, for me, I probably mentioned this last week, but first reading the Urantia book, I was so glad to have reality sorted out in this way, you know, that has these three levels. You know, we have a body, we have a mind, and we have spirit. And to give reality to each of those levels, you know, each is an independent realm of energetic phenomena, you might say, and even substance. And then later we learn about the Mirantia level, which kind of intervenes in there. But those are the three basic levels of reality. So to me, at least, it was so helpful to have that authoritatively straightened out. You know, energy is thing, mind is meaning, and spirit is value. So this idea that value is derived from the spirit level. Make spirit
into something real.
They
reiterate that, too, time and time again, as we go on, you know, they reiterate that through the whole book, that spirit values are the supreme values, right? And that's what we're trying to reach through the what we can contemplate and find the meaning in our minds, right? We find that meaning, and then we achieve that value.
I
was just going to say that whole idea of value itself is really amorphous to me, because it's like we grow in our understanding of value. In other words, we we keep exchanging for higher values as we move along, right? Or it becomes more inclusive, you know.
Or we realize we have value insight.
Yeah, right. As we realize a particular level, and then because down below then it says mind establishes those relative relationships between energy and spirit. So it just shows the relativity of this whole engagement, you know, that as we...
That word relative, I think, is really interesting because, and even the word relationships, I mean, I think part of what they're saying is the body, mind, and spirit are related. You know, they're part of the same reality.
Yes.
So that's another way of thinking of a relative relationship. It's like a relative, like having a relationship with your relative.
Yeah, right.
Or it could mean relative in relation to each other. But,
well, and they're relative, but they're relative.
They relate
to one another. Yes. So it's like there's different nuances to the whole idea, concept of relativity.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. Well, it's funny how they introduced that last sentence. Even in time and space. Even in time and space.
Yes.
Which is where we are. Mind establishes those relative relationships between energy and spirit, which are suggestive of mutual kinship.
Mutual kinship. Yes.
In eternity.
That's another way.
Mutual kinship. That's another, you know, kin. You know, it's like, you know, the mind enables us to understand and feel or experience that energy and spirit are kin to each other. You know, the mind, as it intervenes, or as it, however they put that, it establishes that relationship.
In our connectivity.
In our experience. Yeah. Right.
Interconnectivity.
One of the things that I love to do with the search engines, and the one that Troy Bishop created is my favorite one. I use it constantly. It's the only one I use, actually. I think I love it most because it shows you papers on one side and then what you're searching for or what you're reading in the center, and then you can also search the whole book on the other side. So you have all three columns present and visible at one time, and you can see exactly what you're searching.
Yeah.
And you can still read the paper you're on and search at the same time. So it's really pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But I love to put in a term like mind is, and do an exact match on that and say, okay, mind is, what are all the definitions of mind in the Eureka book, right? Or you can put in, you can do it with anything. You could say faith is, love is, and it's extraordinary that these, you know, various different descriptions come up throughout the book, and, you know, and then they're describing what it is. And two of them actually come up, several of them come up in paper 9. This paper is all about mind, which leads you to believe that mind is spirit. You know, I mean, it's the gift of spirit. It's what allows us to tap in. And this one, this particular quote that always comes up for me with mind is from paper 1. And here again, they're establishing this concept of mind, but this one is really intriguing because, and just like throughout the book, it talks about the inner life, right? Our inner life, how important that is, that we have an inner life, that we know what's going on there, you know, that that's real, that dictates our perceptions about everything, is what's going on in the inner life. And it says, this is from paper 1, 3, 7. It says, in the inner experience of man, mind is joined to matter. Such material-linked minds cannot survive mortal death. The technique of survival is embraced in those adjustments of the human will and those transformations in the mortal mind whereby such a God-conscious intellect gradually becomes spirit-taught and eventually spirit-led. this evolution of the human mind from matter association to spirit union results in the transmutation of the potentially spirit phases of the mortal mind into the Mirantra realities of the immortal soul. Mortal mind subservient to matter is destined to become increasingly material and consequently to suffer eventual personality extinction. Mind yielded to spirit is destined to become increasingly spiritual and ultimately to achieve oneness with the surviving and guiding divine spirit, and in this way to attain survival and eternity of personality existence. You know, I think that is just so crucial to understanding what's going on inside of us. That you know, how can our minds be joined to matter? I mean, what they're saying is our mind is joined to matter. Such material-linked minds cannot survive mortal death. The technique of survival is embraced in those adjustments, the thought adjuster, right? Those adjustments of the human will and those transformations in the mortal mind whereby a God-conscious intellect gradually becomes spirit-taught and eventually spirit-led. That's being born of the spirit, right? That's deciding, yeah, I'm more than just a body and a brain and a material mechanism. There's something more to me than that. And I can contemplate that reality, the reality of, you know, as Chuck likes to say, the urges, the thing that urges me on, the thing that urges my soul to ponder the mysteries of the universe, the thing that urges me to ask these questions, you know, and to venture into the great unknown and to want to know the reality of mind and what's going on in the inner life when you spirit. What's happening there? Something real is happening. And I think that's just, to me, that's so important. That's just fundamentally important for every human to understand. Something is happening in the inner life. Mm-hmm. Allow your mind to contemplate spirit realities. And watch what happens.
You know? Yeah, it's pretty.
With our volition.
I always marvel at the fact that the life carriers is designed a physical organism that can eventually make contact with spirit. I mean, that's just such a feat of engineering, if you think about it. You know, we think about our smartphones and how they connect to the cloud, you know, wirelessly. Wow, how does that happen? You know. And then, you know, we're kind of doing the same thing, only in space, because we're not just connecting to material signals, we're actually connecting to spirit, you know, which is on another level of reality.
Yeah.
But that's so important because that's where we get our values. You know, it's like the mind is constantly evaluating. You know, every decision we make requires an evaluation. You know, am I going to do this or am I going to do that? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's an evaluation process. And if you bring spirit into that, if you bring your adjuster into that, or bring God into that, or spirit truth, or Holy Spirit, any or all of those spirit endowments we've been given, those are brought into the evaluation process. You know, that's kind of where the spirit identification maybe can begin, because when the spirit is influencing our evaluations, then we become more like that, you know, the qualities of that spirit, you know, which is sort of a pathway to knowing God, you know, when you think of it that way.
Yeah,
because it's
exactly.
Really God's presence within that is inspiring our evaluations.
Right.
And that's kind of a feeling sometimes. I mean, it's not like we hear voices in our head, but we can sort of submit our dilemma, you know, our evaluation dilemma to God, to spirit, you know, within, like you're saying, Paula, in our inner life. And we can depend there will be a response. There will be a response in whatever way we're able to receive it. sometimes it's just getting a feeling. You know, I have these two options. I can't decide which one is the right way to go, you know. And they say, yeah, well, the Spirit of Truth will speak and say, this is the way. And that's
this
that
way.
Kind of, mm-hmm. It's not a literal voice, but it's an evaluation certainty. It's almost, oh, yeah, that's mm-hmm. the way, not that. You know, that. What was I thinking? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. when you get that kind of spirit input into an evaluation process, that's a way of achieving certainty, in a sense, or conviction. You know, they speak of the Spirit of Truth as the conviction of truth. So you get a sense of conviction or a feeling of rightness. You know what I mean? Do you guys?
Absolutely.
Yes. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
And having raised some children and grandchildren, you know, been involved with grandchildren and children and other children in my life, something happens to them when they get, when they reach that age of their first moral decision, right? Did you guys notice in your children that when that spirit comes, suddenly they're more reasonable? You say something to them like, well, we can't do that because of this. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, it isn't just like, yeah, I went there. No, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. Yeah, all right. That makes sense. You know, and it's like where uh-huh. you can reason with them. And it's that spirit that's present in them that's creating it. And I think the difficulty, so here it is with us. It's always a part of us. You know, I can remember as a child wondering, I could feel an otherness in me and wondering what that was, you know. But it's there. It's in you. And so it's a part of you. And it's hard sometimes to differentiate, as you were kind of pointing out, Chuck, you know. How do you know that's the leading of the spirit, you know? It's subtle. It's almost a realization. I would say it's a feeling, but it's not. It's like all of that, you know? It's like all of that at once. It's like I'm contemplating something that's meaningful to me, and then I have a realization, and that realization is a sense of knowing. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and even real is in the word realize, right? It's something mm-hmm. is realityizing in you. It's like a substance
yes.
that's there, and you just grabbed mm-hmm. it now. You just realized that it's there, and you went, womp, you grabbed it. And you see it for the first time. And
mm-hmm.
maybe for the umpteenth time, right? But it's
yeah.
a reality that you become aware of, and that's the
mm-hmm.
spirit working in your mind, don't you think? I mean,
yeah,
that's
no,
when.
A,
oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
go ahead.
A short quote here. I can
okay,
add,
cool.
add to that, I think. This is from paper 102 in one of the religion papers, I believe. It's a short thing where they say the 102.312, where they say the pursuit of knowledge constitutes science. The search for wisdom is philosophy. The love for God is religion. The hunger for truth is a revelation. And then here's the kicker. But then they say, but it is the indwelling thought adjuster that attaches the feeling of reality to man's spiritual insight into the cosmos.
There it is.
Yeah.
A feeling
of reality.
Almost
exactly what you were saying, Paula. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the thing about feeling that conviction of truth, or this is the way, you know, all those kind of inner, I don't know, receptions, I guess you might say.
And validations.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, right.
If you don't think about it, though, that won't happen. I think that's what Jesus meant when he said you can't expect it in people who give little or no time to the thoughtful
yeah,
contemplation
right.
of these realities, right? But
mm-hmm.
if you do give some time to the thoughtful
mm-hmm.
contemplation of spirit realities, then that happens.
Yeah. Then you can have spiritual insight, which is what they're
right.
talking about here. Because I don't think there's any insight. It's hard. You can't have insight without thought. You have to be right. giving serious thought to something to have an insight about it. But knowing
that's
so
true.
When we have spiritual insights, it's the adjuster that attaches the feeling of reality to those insights. So that feeling of reality thing is subtle, like you were saying, but it's also, well, it's very real because that's what it's about. You know, the feeling
it's
of reality.
It's also very real.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's kind of a spirit feeling, which is maybe not the same as emotional feeling. I mean, the book uses the word kind of in those two different ways, which can maybe be confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like saying it's our thoughts, not your feelings, or something that leads you Godward. Well, okay. But our thoughts are not God. So, and there's tremendous
well,
feelings associated with being with God, but they're spirit feelings. But our thoughts get us there, right?
Get
I don't know.
Just,
you know, making
feelings.
That bridge.
That's...
Making that bridge to the material level and the spiritual level.
I'm so glad you said that because I've thought about that a lot of times. And, you know, some things are feelings. Love is a feeling. I can't prove it. I feel it. And you can't tell me I don't feel it, right? Because it's
mm-hmm.
real. Well, my understanding of God is just exactly like that. I feel
mm-hmm.
it. I don't, you know, I can't articulate to you in any kind of way why I feel it or how I feel it or how it's real to me. But I do feel it. And
so there's a feeling of reality about
right.
it, right? Yeah.
Right. And that is a feeling. And I understand why they kind of warn us about emotions in terms of, you know, our feelings, like because so many times we can invoke certain feelings by external forces, right? Somebody can invoke a feeling in you or an emotion in you or
mm-hmm.
some kind of substance can do that or a whirling dervish can get that into a kind of a trance or, you know, there's lots
oh, yeah.
of ways
oh, yeah.
to
mm-hmm.
evoke a feeling. But this, what we're talking about when you have that spirit, you know, that reality response, that's different. And that also is a feeling. A reality response is
mm-hmm.
is an eternal feeling
mm-hmm.
that you get. That's true. Years ago, that woman who told me, you know, they claim to have the truth, and they may or they may not, but you have the ability within you to know the truth when you hear it. Probably one of the most powerful things anyone ever said to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was only 16 mm-hmm. years old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that every 16-year-old should hear. You know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because it empowers you to understand that. And she went on to say, if someone tells you something and they claim it's the truth and it grinds against your natural beliefs, that's the way she said it.
Grind.
That grinding.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fingers
yeah.
on the cardboard.
Yeah. It's something about it makes you kind of cringe, you know, ooh, that doesn't feel right. And it was amazing to me that shortly after she said that to me, I went to study this religion I was involved with, and she told me that if I couldn't convert my parents to it, God would have to kill them at Armageddon, and it would be my
yeah,
fault.
Right,
and that
right. oh.
totally grinded against me. That was
yeah.
like, that's not my God.
No.
I know I have a concept of God in my heart, and that's not it.
Yeah. No, I'm
and
sorry
she,
you have that concept, yes.
Yeah. Well, and if she hadn't said that to me, you know, you look back on your life and you see all things work for a reason, you know. But they do explain that in paper 16, which is the seven master spirits. It's interesting how these things come out in these papers. You got to read them all because they're all so full of gems. You just can't miss a single one. But 16.6.4 says, there exists in all personality associations of the cosmic mind a quality which might be denominated the, quote, reality response. unquote. It is this universal cosmic endowment of will creatures which saves them from becoming helpless victims of the implied a priori assumptions of science, philosophy, and religion. This reality sensitivity of the cosmic mind responds to certain phases of reality just as energy material responds to gravity. It would be still more correct to say that these supermaterial realities so respond to the mind of the cosmos. Isn't that an amazing paragraph? I mean, in lieu of what we're discussing.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah, the causation, you know, duty worship.
Right.
The intuitions of the cosmic mind. So interesting how they put that. That we can recognize reality on those three levels. You know, causation being the material level, duty being causation, duty and worship. Yeah, duty being kind of the mind level where you understand. You can understand that you have a place in the universe, you know, that you're an actor on the stage, so to speak, and there's responsibility associated with that. And then, of course, causation, duty, worship. Worship, then, you know, as we've been talking about, is our way of accessing the spirit level, among other things. I mean, it also grows our relationship with God, but in so doing, we become more and more open to the value input. And the spirit inputs, you know, that come from a divine relationship, which we're invited to cultivate and begin to enjoy and develop, you know.
And
every day as a thing, you know.
Yes, and respond to our respondability to that reality. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Our respondability and our and duty
mutual.
And privilege, and
it's
keeps us
mutual. Yeah,
and
I mean, we come to
and
learn
that's the downgrasp.
That God responds to us too. Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
The downgrasp.
Mm-hmm. The downgrasp.
You know, yeah, I'll reach out.
Yeah.
We got a handshake going here.
You know what? Years ago, I did an article and I called it the uphill downreach.
Okay.
And I lost it in the fire.
Oh no!
Yeah, I know. It was kind of clever, but that's what exactly what you're talking about. It's a mutual grasp in both directions. Yeah,
it is.
Yes. Right.
It's a
very much so.
It's so like that handshake. Remember when we did phone modems? And when they finally made the connection, it was like,
right.
Bing! Now you're on. Yep, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Now you've made the connection. Yeah. But I like what Gary on the board said. You can't have insight without God. No, so true is that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then they tell us that love is the guide to true insight or something like that.
Isn't that an intriguing?
Yeah, love is,
and
I think they use the word guide, but the true insight comes from love. From love, you can't have true insight without love. I think that's a very powerful thing to keep in mind.
Divine things must be loved to be known, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Human things can be known to be loved, but divine things must be loved to be known.
Uh huh.
You fall in love with truth, beauty, and goodness, right? Those are three of the primary spirit values, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and love certainly is the one that is coheres all of them.
Mm.
Love is the first
indeed.
Motivation, the first great motivation, the first great attitude. Love is God's attitude. And if we approach life with an attitude of love, if we approach even our inner life with an attitude of love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of not, I don't know, you know, an attitude of love that seeks the best possible outcomes.
Right,
and
it's a parental. It's a parental thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all of us who have had children, you know what that's like. You know, even when they're little, you just are fascinated to watch them, you know, to give them attention and be curious about them and respond, you know, when they reach out, and all those qualities of relationship that we associate with parental love, of course, absolutely characterizes the love of God. And that's why we're taught that God is like a divine parent. So that watch care, or that kind of parental desires of curiosity and just wanting to watch all the time and interact and see, not to dominate or control, but to just sort of be there, you know, to facilitate experience and, I don't know, all the things that a good parent does. But God is doing that too. And, you know, the piece in that always kind of grabs me is this idea of attention, you know, that God is always paying attention to us, you know, not trying to interfere, make us feel self-conscious or anything, but we know God is paying attention. And that opens up this potential for that response or respondability that you're talking about there.
Yeah.
I have a little compilation here of just one-liners about this feeling.
Oh, sure.
Idea.
Yes.
Right.
I love that.
So these are just snippets. But here's one from Paper 101 where they say, the feeling of religious assurance is more than an emotional feeling. You know, that's another, like, sign to hang on the kitchen wall.
Mm-hmm.
So
many
pointing out the feeling of religious assurance is more than an emotional feeling. In other words, there's another level to that that goes beyond just our. And then here's another one. Yeah, and you're all familiar with this one. I say the quality values is felt. So values are felt. I think that's a really helpful guide. And they associate that with quality. You know, so
qualities, values are
values
felt.
Are expressed. Yeah, that's like you say. That feels good. No, that doesn't feel so good, right?
Right.
And all kinds of things, and because of the values that are the qualities that are in play. You know, is it attractive or is it not? Does it grind? As you're saying.
Yeah.
But here's a good one. This is one of the Marancha Moda. Where is it again? Jack, 48718. Oh, yeah, it's Marancha Moda. Well, human philosophy statement. It's used for instruction in Marancha Moda, shall we say. Number 16, it says, you cannot perceive spiritual truth until you feelingly experience it. And many truths are not really felt except in adversity.
So that's so true.
And that's because of the value of adversity. If that's where we sometimes end up having our strongest feelings of spiritual truth. If we really
Here's a thought about that, Chuck.
To me,
that brings up something. You know, sometimes when you're in pain, probably most times for me, your senses become much more acute.
And your perception.
Yeah, it just seems like it to me. You know, it's like because you're just. Your awareness is so intensely focused, you know, it makes sense to me that some things are only learned in adversity. It's like adversity creates the situation that makes that, you know, reality gives it an opportunity to shoot through or to be realized because you're so focused on what you're going through right now, right?
Yeah.
That all of a sudden now you're like a big question mark, and now that question can be answered.
It's like a lesson.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Philosophically, the relationship between suffering and growth are unrefutable. In other words, we can't grow without adversity. So without suffering. You know, it's a big philosophical concept that's discussed out there. And
oh, I'll bet. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying here. Yeah.
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 They're
well,
only
in
felt
fact,
in adversity
even,
or learned.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, too. Goethe has a quote that says, colors are the sufferings of light.
Ooh.
Isn't that brilliant?
Okay.
Doesn't that, you know, it's like, yeah, chew on that.
So
you
take
that
as
that?
A metaphor. Yeah.
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 Anyway, I'm not sure what it has to
wise.
Do with the topic.
Yeah, well, people that are wise are often colorful, you know, and they've probably been through a lot.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, I always used
yeah.
to like to explain it to, when I was introducing the Urantia book and certain concepts of the Urantia book to a group, one of my favorite ways to explain this concept was to say, you know, so you, right now you have a choice to go to two lectures today. One lecture is by a person who was born into wealth and really pretty much had everything they ever needed handed to them on a silver platter and never really had to struggle with adversity,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other lecture is by this person who, you know, was thrown in a concentration camp, against all odds survived, you know, escaped, made it through the frozen tundra, you know,
right.
went on to, you know, be highly educated and, yeah, and achieve a tremendous amount of success in life in spite
right.
of all the difficulties. Which one would you rather
right.
go see?
Exactly.
And hands down,
yeah.
oh, the second one.
Yeah.
I don't want to see
yeah.
the person who never had the struggle. That isn't going to inspire
no.
me.
No.
Why
no.
is that? Because we all struggle. And so
yeah.
somebody else, you know, when someone can persevere and overcome, like Jesus, for instance, I have overcome.
Mm-hmm.
I have triumphed,
right.
and
uh-huh.
you can too, right?
Overcome
that,
the world.
Yeah, I've overcome the world, and you can too.
Mm-hmm.
That is,
yeah.
you know, especially on a world, a difficult world like this. We need that. We need
yeah.
to believe in that.
Yeah.
And we, and the more you persevere, the stronger you get. It's like, that's the beauty of, you know, you see young people struggling and they're ready to, you know, throw in the towel. You go, no, no, give yourself a chance. You'll survive this. You'll survive many things.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And the more you actually survive, and the more you overcome,
well,
the more
you, have
you
that
realize
experience.
You can overcome. Yeah.
Yeah, you have that
exactly.
experience under
right.
your belt, you know, and you have
yes.
greater confidence. Do either of you
right.
remember Jay Newbern? Did you know Jay Newbern?
Yes.
Newbern?
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably did, Paula.
He was in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, he was in San Francisco. He was a friend of Stephen Vance and Larry Geis and those,
mm-hmm.
that contingent. But back in the old days, you know, back in the
the San Fran contingent.
Yeah. We used to work on projects together. I mean, there was more than just them,
right.
but, you know, there's a little gang of us. And one memory about Jay Newbern that I always love is whenever things would get difficult, you know, in the group or in any kind of way, he used to be an anchor, news anchor, you know, so he had that voice.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
That sort of voice,
yeah.
voice of God.
Right.
He would always say, this is a test.
Oh, this is a test, yes.
Just leave it at that. This is a test, you know.
This is a
and
test.
That,
come on.
Yeah, and that brings in, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but not, you know, it brings in a quality of motivation that's sort of in line with what we're talking about. Okay, maybe this is a test. You know, the difficulty that we've encountered, whatever it is you know, adversity
that's
or something.
True.
You know, if you look at it as a mm-hmm. test, then, okay, how am mm-hmm. I going to handle the test? You know, it's like the essay
right.
question on a test or something. You know, you want to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right. And in adversity, we use our minds to solve the problem, and we make it better for future generations than if we can apply our mental acumen to solving any problem through adversity,
right.
Because we humans really do hate to suffer. I mean, we don't love to suffer.
Yeah.
And that's a blessing, right? Because we don't like to suffer, we work on making sure we won't ever have to suffer that again. And
yes, right.
And that's a good thing.
We get motivated.
You know?
We look ahead. We kick stumbling blocks out of the way as we go down the path, too, you know. It's like,
yeah.
You know, the less unnecessary suffering, the better.
Right.
Exactly.
And you know what's
yeah.
interesting,
yeah.
too, about our comrades when they suffer? We rally around them, right? We say, oh, man,
mm-hmm.
I know you're suffering. How can I help? You know, let me take some of the burden off of you. So it brings out this beautiful altruistic nature in us when
mm-hmm.
we know what it's like
mm-hmm.
to suffer and we see our comrades suffering, we want to help.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
that's such a beautiful thing, altruism. It's like those inevitabilities, you know, one of everybody's favorite sections in the book is that
mm-hmm.
section on the inevitabilities. Is this desirable? Is faith desirable? Is altruism desirable?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
If these things are desirable, then you have to grapple with the opposite of these things, and so that you fully understand them, you know,
mm-hmm.
what they are and how much they mean to you. You can do, as you say, Chuck, an evaluation of them and
mm-hmm.
decide, no, faith is the only way to go.
Right.
I'm
right.
tired of grappling with doubt. You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes
we bring suffering on ourselves, you know. And other
gosh.
Times we just happen to walk into the path of events we have no control over. And
right.
you know, it's like Pam, you know, with your fire, you know, it's like you didn't set that fire, you know, you didn't do that to yourself, obviously.
No.
But it's something you had to cope with, and I just can't imagine. I know that just sounds so discouraging and disheartening. But then there's other times when we bring suffering on ourselves.
You just learn what the real values are.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll never forget years ago when that big Malibu fire happened. And it burned so many homes, beautiful homes, up in the hills of Malibu. Our dear friend Dwayne Faw's home burned down. And Dwayne was a remarkable person. He had,
he was
a brigadier general. He served in 3 wars. He went and enlisted as a young man in World War II and ended up in the Air Force because the Army line was too long. He ended up being a pilot. And he had been all over the world. He had collected artifacts from you know,
oh my gosh.
His friends in Vietnam in a village had given him this sacred relic that was their ancestors because they so honored his loving service. And he was a remarkable Urantia book reader and a tremendous person, you know, and great mind, great thinker. And here his house burned down, and I tried for days to get hold of him, and I finally reached him. He only knew his house burned down because his daughter saw it burning on the news.
Oh,
wow.
I finally reached him, and I said, oh, Dwayne, I am so sorry about your house. And his comment was, well, Father has liberated me of all my material fetters.
Yes.
And then
there's
he let it go.
There is
something.
That's who he
was.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. He has liberated me of all my material fetters.
I can now transfer my
great
seat of
southern
identity.
Accent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Transfer my seat of identity.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of those things, you know, I mean, he had an original Vinnie Ventola hanging over his fireplace that was absolutely spectacular. It was big. And so, and lots of archival information from the early movement and stuff
was lost in that fire. Sure.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
Look at the Alexandrian Library, you know.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
What did
look
we
at
lose
that.
There, you know?
But we
yeah,
can be, we can rest assured that the angels always keep all of that for us. So Pam, someday
yes.
that paper you wrote, they're going to say, here you go, Pam.
Yeah.
We have this
yeah.
for you.
That's
we
right.
sent it in archive.
Yeah. All right.
Here it is.
That's good.
It wasn't lost, really.
No, just
it's like,
set
yeah.
aside. Just
yeah.
set aside.
Yeah.
yeah, just set aside in a different file.
Yeah.
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 Pending.
It's
yeah, it's the pending file, right?
It's like the original version of John's Revelation. That's sitting
that's
somewhere
true.
Too. Yep. I mean, the midwares
have
it. Absolutely. Yeah, they have to. So I'm you know, hoping and praying that can be shared again.
Love to see that. I would love
yeah.
to see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
tell us
anyway.
Anything, right? That's one
oh,
of the
no,
things.
Oh, no. No.
They, yeah, they could have. They did tell us that why it was so garbled and that he was missing, and that a lot of it was missing, and a bunch of what he saw he misunderstood. It wasn't frightening, really, but he
yeah,
in,
but a lot of
in
that,
his
all the blood stuff. I mean, the whole sections of it are lifted directly from Ezekiel. You know, from the Old Testament,
right.
almost copied
right.
over verbatim. It's like that's not John.
That wasn't John's revelation, right?
Yeah.
And think
so,
how many Christians have just, you know, racked their brains trying to figure
oh,
that.
I know.
Yeah.
You know,
so sad,
all important
yeah, so
book
sad.
Of the Bible out.
Garbled
what's
messages.
This thing talking about?
Yeah,
and right, and the more compelling they can make a case about what it's saying, then they get everybody
yeah.
all riled up, and it's
oh,
you
know
not you know
they
not worth
prophecy,
it.
You know the prophecy
right.
thing. So I'm like ah,
it's just a big
prophecy.
Puzzle with half the pieces are missing, and they'll never be able
yeah,
to figure it
exactly.
all out.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that was intended. To open the window on extraplanetary reality, off-planet reality.
Right.
Because
right.
Jesus yeah. didn't really do that to any great extent.
No.
He said, oh, my Father's house are many mansions, but and he has, you know, these other responsibilities he points to. But in terms of, like, okay, here are the 420 counselors, here's this, here's that. I mean, it seemed like it was given to John to make this bridge of revelation to expanded understanding of, you know, how all this is positioned in the universe.
Right.
And, you know, it's so sad that it got so distorted into something else because you can see little snippets of the original in there and you can
right.
really tell the difference because they're so like, whoa, they're like blazing with light
right.
compared to the streets running with blood and all that other stuff, you know. It's like, God. I mean,
too
that's
bad,
not
isn't
Jesus.
It?
Jesus wouldn't talk that way. Yeah.
Well
maybe
what?
That's a good.
I'm hearing. Yes. I'm
yeah.
hearing Andre right now.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
You're
and,
channeling
and,
our buddy
he,
Andre.
I am channeling him. He's saying this takes the cake. We've gone 50 minutes.
This takes the
5-0.
We lost our playground monitor.
Yeah, we did. That's true. Oh, well. Sorry, folks.
Oh, well.
But
well,
it was
all
a fun.
To our topic.
It was all good. It's
yeah.
all good. No.
Yeah.
Which is
oh, yeah.
the topic.
The
ministry
yeah.
of mind. The ministry
exactly.
of mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's see what the book has to say about that. Do you want to read that, Chuck or Pam?
Pam, you can go for it if you want.
Yeah.
Or we can split it
all
up
right.
or something.
Okay. All right.
It's pretty
I'll,
short. You can just go for it.
I'll
it's
start.
Pretty short, yeah.
Excuse me. All right. The Ministry of Mind. The third source and center is infinite in mind. If the universe should grow to infinity, still his mind potential would be adequate to endow limitless numbers of creatures with suitable minds and other prerequisites of intellect. In the domain of created mind, the third person, with his coordinate and subordinate associations, rules supreme. The realms of creature mind are of exclusive origin in the third source and center. He is the bestower of mind. Even the father fragments find it impossible to indwell the minds of men until the way has been properly prepared for them by the mind action and spiritual function of the infinite spirit. The unique feature of mind is that it can be bestowed upon such a wide range of life. Through his creative and creature associates, the Third Source and Center ministers to all minds on all spheres. He ministers to human and subhuman intellect through the adjutants of the local universes and through the agency of the physical controllers, ministers even to the lowest non-experiencing entities of the most primitive types of living things. And always is the direction of a mind, a ministry of mind spirit or mind energy personalities. Since the third person of deity is the source of mind, it is quite natural that the evolutionary will creatures find it easier to form comprehensible concepts of the infinite spirit than they do of either the eternal son or the universal father. The reality of the conjoint creator is disclosed imperfectly in the very existence of human mind. The conjoint creator is the ancestor of the cosmic mind, and the mind of man is an individualized circuit, an impersonal portion of that cosmic mind as it is bestowed in a local universe by a creative daughter of the third source and center. Because the third person is the source of mind, do not presume to reckon that all phenomena of mind are divine. Human intellect is rooted in the material origin of the animal races. Universe intelligence is no more a true revelation of God, who is mind, than is physical nature a true revelation of the beauty and harmony of paradise. Perfection is in nature, but nature is not perfect. The conjoint creator is the source of mind, but mind is not a conjoint creator. Mind on Urantia is a compromise between the essence of thought perfection and the evolving mentality of your immature human nature. The plan for your intellectual evolution is indeed one of sublime perfection, but you are far short of that divine goal as you function in the tabernacles of the flesh. Mind is truly of divine origin, and it does have a divine destiny, but your mortal minds are not yet of divine dignity. All too often, you mar your minds by insincerity and sear them with unrighteousness. You subject them to animal fear and distort them by useless anxiety. Therefore, though the source of mind is divine, mind as you know it on your world of ascension can hardly become the object of great admiration, much less of adoration or worship. The contemplation of the immature and inactive human intellect should lead only to reactions of humility.
Wow. That's a sobering,
yes.
Yes. Call that.
Yeah,
I guess
don't
you
scare yourself.
The word hubris comes to mind.
Yes, indeed. Well, the not only immature, but inactive. That's such
yeah.
a telling,
yes. there you
telling
go.
Yes. commentary about human intellect.
Yes.
Inactive, you know, just think
yeah,
about all
true
the
and inactive.
All the mind time, you know, the mental activity gets logged in our series
yeah.
of activity.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
how much time we
takes,
spend just rehashing
yeah.
things that happen to us.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
You're getting
oh,
into thought
gosh.
Loop. Thought loop?
Yeah,
you
yeah the thought
loop.
Loop, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's, you know, endlessly stewing over something.
What
yeah.
if? What if?
Yeah. Right. This is an amazing section. Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there's so many things. Almost every paragraph has something in it for me that makes me go, wow.
Yeah.
What are the implications of that?
What stands out for you, Paula?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. You got to go back now. Let's see.
Well, interesting.
Go ahead. If you have one, go ahead.
Well, there's just one thing I want. It's worth maybe underscoring, is because it relates to questions that sometimes come up in other contexts. In paragraph three, you know, they say the unique feature of mind is it can be bestowed upon such a wide range of life through its creative and creature associates. The third source and center ministers to minds on all spheres. And then here's where it gets interesting. It says he ministers to human and subhuman intellect through the adjutants of the local universes and through the agency of the physical controllers, ministers even to the lowest non-experiencing entities of the most primitive types of living things. Mm-hmm. And always is the direction of mind, a ministry of mind, spirit, or mind energy, personalities. But talking about these primitive types of living things, I mean, is that referring to plants?
I would think so.
Must be.
Yeah.
It must be.
I would think so. I mean, plants don't have adjutant. Yeah.
Are they considered mechanical? Are they mechanical non-teachables?
I would say that plants are, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think that would be a perfect example.
But I would say plants are non-experiencing entities, I think, generally.
That paragraph struck me because of the last sentence.
You don't know about that. Well, okay.
I'm not sure about that. I mean,
well,
they certainly are responsive.
They're responsive, absolutely, yeah. And that's a category of experience, I guess, but it's of this type. Then maybe it's in the domain of the physical controllers. So
and the lower adjutants?
Mm-hmm. Well, not in plants, I don't think.
Well,
no?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Plants. Yeah, yeah. But this is an interesting role they're pointing out with the physical controllers who come from the same source. You know, they also are third source.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So...
Yeah, well, that particular paragraph struck me, the last line, always is the direction of mind, a ministry of mind spirit or mind energy personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so mind spirit, that's us, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we embrace like that.
Yeah.
Right. Or if we identify with spirit, like that one paragraph I read. You know, we've become spirit identified. We're mind spirit now. But mind energy is another phenomena. And that intrigues me. What do you think they're getting? What is mind energy? Is that somebody who isn't dominated by spirit an animal?
Right. I think it's just what we were talking about, the non-experiencing entities by the physical controllers. That would be mind energy level.
Yeah.
I mean, that sentence is about the ministry of mind. I mean, not our mind necessarily, but always it's the direction of mind, a ministry of mind spirit, which I think would be the adjutants or upstream from another spirit, or mind energy personalities, which would be the physical controllers.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So there's this combination of ministry coming from these two types of being, or two realms of personality. That's how I read it. Yeah, it's parallel to the sentence before.
Yes, it does. It sums it up. Yeah, and it's like the physical controllers represent the part of the infinite spirit that accesses the paradise powers. You know, the energy level powers, as opposed to the more the other mind spirit powers.
So there's the physical, and then reaching from the physical to the mind, to the Right. Eventually to, you know, volition. I mean, that's the thing about the project on this planet with life implantation that they were all waiting for, was the appearance of will, of human will. And that was a great day, you know, for the life carriers and everybody else who was involved. They've been waiting for this whole time. Because
that's
human
another
will,
statement.
All of a sudden, you have agency. You have independent agency. You actually have a being, a person. Yeah, you have a person.
Mm-hmm. Self-acting, in a way.
Yeah,
in a way.
Right. Yeah, it's capable portion, of
learning. Self-determining, anyway, at the very least, self-determining.
Right.
And all three of those cosmic intuitions are functioning such a mind, in such a being, as a will creature. It's interesting to think about those three intuitions of the cosmic mind and how they relate to the seven adjutant mind spirits.
Right.
You know, so we've always noticed how reality goes from one to three to seven, right?
Right.
Typical pattern.
That's the original pattern.
Yeah,
the original pattern.
Over and over again.
The Father to the Trinity to the seven master spirits.
Right.
The seven super universes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I wonder if there's something similar going on there. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'd have to think about that a bit. But even so, I think those cosmic intuitions of the cosmic mind are what sort of maybe prepare the ground for the reception of the seven adjutants, which then prepares the ground for the reception of the Holy Spirit, you know, which is the first super mind endowment that we receive. It's the Holy Spirit. But it requires...
So it's going the other way. It's going from seven to one. That's interesting.
Kind of, yeah, right.
And,
in
yeah,
that case,
right.
Yeah.
This statement intrigued me. Mind is truly, and it's something you just said about will dignity. This jumped out at me because of that. Because, I always loved to contemplate what a big deal it was when Mind of Will Dignity appeared on your ranch and the life carrier said, okay, our work is done here, right? I mean, it was a big deal, right?
Mind of
Will Dignity appearing on any planet is a big deal. It's like, okay, these are potentially the children of God now. Our work is done. We can leave. You take over. It says in paragraph 6, mind is truly of divine origin. And it does have a divine destiny, but your mortal minds are not yet of divine dignity.
Yeah.
I thought, when you read that, Pam, I thought, okay, we go from mind of will dignity to mind of divine dignity.
Yes.
So even our mind evolves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From just
right
simple
now,
will dignity to divine dignity. I thought that was really an interesting statement. That paragraph, that whole paragraph is amazing.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. We are undignified at this point.
Well, yeah. We're in a way.
Yes. De-dignified.
We're striving towards. We're striving towards divine dignity. The fruits of divinity, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's that step of transferring the seat of identity. I mean, that's such a big step along the way in that process. That's something we do consciously, or we're invited to at least.
Right.
Maybe it happens unconsciously as well. But when it's done consciously, you know, that's a significant, I think, step up in our own implementation of the functionality of what we've been given in terms of mind, because it's starting to touch the Mirantia level.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and they even say that if we, you know, make it all the way to the first psychic circle, we can receive a overlay, I think. I forget what word they use. An endowment of Mirantia mind, an overlay of Mirantia mind upon adjutant mind, but that's actually possible during this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they seem to be saying pretty clearly. I mean, it requires mastering all seven psychic circles, you know, reaching that level of relative human maturity or something like that, you know, where our mastery of life has brought us to a place that we can actually, you know, do things that are significant, you know, and helpful.
Right.
In league with spirit guidance, you know, we kind of develop that relationship with our adjuster to such a degree that, you know, we sort of reach that thought controller stage where, you know, our mind becomes, the adjuster is using it just like we are, you know. It's just like,
right.
It's a realm or an arena of meeting with our adjuster, in a sense, more consciously than, you know, in our earlier stages. And that can then be rewarded by this endowment of Marantia mind. I can't even imagine. But it's an exciting prospect to think about. It's motivation.
Oh, man.
To try to get to the first circle, whatever that entails, which, you know.
Well,
they're
telling us
but,
our minds are rooted.
Uh-huh.
They use that word. They're rooted.
Yes.
In a material animal nature. Right.
Oh,
I'm trying to remember how exact.
Which paragraph?
Yes.
I'm trying to. It's five, Pam?
Five.
Uh-huh. Second sentence.
Human intellect is rooted in the material origin. Right, right, of the animal races, exactly. And
yeah,
that's why
so
we
here
have
we are.
That's why we have adjutant mm-hmm. mind, because it's sort of this ladder, this bridge from the animal to the human.
Yeah, it's the
right.
root.
And that is the root.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to overcome that, you know. And again, they use the word intellect,
well,
and I'm curious about that too, because that is, they're not saying mind again; they're saying intellect. And
exactly.
I did a search for intellect and what it is. You did too. Intellect. I did this search. Intellect is. That appears four times, and one of them is what we just read. Human intellect is rooted in the material origin of the animal races. But then later, in paper 103, it says the intellect is the harmonizer and the ever-present conditioner and qualifier of the sum total of mortal experience. And then in 133, it says, the mind early begins to manifest qualities which are supermaterial. The truly reflective human intellect is not altogether bound by the limits of time. That's an interesting one. You know, the contemplation,
mm-hmm.
we get into that contemplation again. And the last one where it gives you a little what intellect is from paper 196, The Faith of Jesus, the last paper, Humanitarian Fellowship, Love. The purely animal mind may be gregarious for self-protection, but only the spirit-indwelt intellect is unselfishly altruistic and unconditionally loving. So, you know, that
mm-hmm.
that's interesting.
Yeah, right. That's when spirit begins to blend in. Mm-hmm.
Right. When they designate, you know, like a word like intellect, and they use it, obviously they use the word intellect more than four times in the book. It's used a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said
mm-hmm.
that while the intellect is not the seat of the spirit, it is indeed the gateway thereto, right? So if the intellect is not the seat, where is it, what is the seat? The intellect is a gateway. So I think that's an important
right.
definition too, you know, the intellect
right,
being
right.
a gateway to something greater,
well,
something of
well,
greater value. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes.
Or Pam, sorry.
I was wondering, that's right. I was wondering about the connection between intellect and consciousness.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Okay.
You know, what occurred to me is intellect implies thought. Intellect implies activity in the mind. You know, when you're thinking about
right.
things, you know, we have thinking
right.
power. You know, we have logic and reason and all these apps sort of that run in our human mind circuits that enable us to think. Whereas consciousness always sounds passive to me. It always sounds like, well, okay, I'm aware of things, right?
Right.
It doesn't
I'm
have that
conscious
same implication.
Of it.
Yeah, huh. It doesn't have that same sort of suggestion of agency or initiative that's taking place in a realm of
right.
thought.
Right, it's like It's like the womb. It's like the womb where mind and intellect operates out of or within. With the brain.
It's like an arena.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's like the arena of consciousness.
You have to be conscious, right? You have to be conscious first. Then you can begin to think about what that means.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
So consciousness is a state of being. But your statement that it's an intellect is active, you know, and I looked
it up
on the in the definition of it is the faculty of reasoning and understanding objectively, especially with regard to abstract or academic matters. Well, all matters. They could add spiritual matters in there as far as I'm concerned. Of course they could.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
the faculty of reasoning and understanding objectively, which is, again, what we're saying, you know, that contemplation that we give to
and all
anything.
Of that thinking is sort of, I don't know, promoted or encouraged by the urges of the agitant spirit.
Right.
And we just get this kind of, okay, I got to do this or I got to do that or I got to, you know, I need to know more about this or I'm curious about that or, you know, all these kind of urges that come up in our own. I wonder if there's more to reality than just me. I wonder if there's a God out there, you know, things like that. It's like these questions. You know, that's all that's urging. And what's so interesting, well, here's an interesting twist on all this, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. But in the fourth paragraph, they say, the third person of deity is the source of mind. Okay, so just kind of leave it there for a second. Over in, let's see, paper 36, where they're talking about the life carriers, and they discuss the adjutant spirits, they say that the seven adjutant mind spirits always accompany the life carriers to a new planet. But they should not be regarded as entities. They are more like circuits.
Yeah.
Now, keeping in mind, you know, or at least I like to keep in mind the definition of circuits from, you know, 1934 dictionary, you know, it's a means of two-way communication between two places, one of the definitions. So if we take that definition and use it as a way to understand the sentence, I think it helps. But anyway, it says they're more like circuits. The spirits of the seven universe adjutants do not function as personalities apart from the universe presence of the divine minister. And this is the part that always kills me. And they say they are, in fact, a level of consciousness of the divine minister and are always subordinate to the action and presence of their creative mother. That notion that, you know, taking it back to what we were just reading, you know, where they say that the third person of deity is the source of mind, that, you know, this is sort of how that happens. You know, it comes down from the master spirits to the universe creative mother spirit, and she is responsible for the provision of mind, to material mind, you know, which is what we have.
Right.
But she's right there. I mean, it's not like it's this sort of this abstract thing that, oh, yeah, well, she's over there somewhere pumping out these.
Yes.
Right. No.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're actually, what do they say? They are, in fact, a level of consciousness of the divine minister. So the agents that are functioning to give me my mind are a level of her consciousness.
Yes,
that means that she's like, that means she's totally conscious of everything that's going on in my mind.
Mm-hmm. As is God himself, as is the spirit of truth.
Well, this is kind of the mechanics for how that's
right.
But it goes
a circuit.
It goes the other way, too. Yeah. If we look at a circuit as a two-way communication, then this enables our consciousness of God. In a way.
Yes.
Because God is present. God is present in our mind.
And we
feel that. I mean, we know we have the adjuster, of course. we have the adjuster, of course, but even on this level of dysfunctional mechanics, she's right there, present in the middle of that.
Completely, and making it all possible. Making it possible for us to discern
she
that we
that
have the presence of God in our mind. Yeah, she is.
Right, right.
She makes us pregnant with that possibility. I mean, makes that possible in every way.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole paragraph is amazing, really. I want to read it again because it says what you just said, Chuck. This is saying it's the same thing. Since the third person of deity is the source of mind, it is quite natural that the evolutionary will creatures find it easier to form comprehensible concepts of the infinite spirit than they do of either the eternal father, or the eternal son, or the universal father. I found that statement to be really compelling. It's like, really? Huh. Okay. I wouldn't have thought that. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And then they go on to say the reality of the conjoint creator is disclosed imperfectly in the very existence of human mind. The conjoint creator is the ancestor of cosmic mind. And the mind of man is an individualized circuit. An impersonal portion of that cosmic mind as it is bestowed in a local universe by the creative daughter of the third source and center. It's
within
one of those
individualized. What's
that? Within the greater consciousness womb.
And an individualized circuit. You know, that's so interesting because if we think of circuit again with this definition of a means of two-way communication, then we have our own line. You know, we're not on a party line. We've got our own line. You know.
Well, and the mind are
of communication. Yeah.
Right.
And if the adjutants are circuits and our mind is a circuit, then we are absolutely intertwined with those adjutants. In other words, our mind, isn't this what, what was her name? Esther said that our mind is the adjutant.
That is our mind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For now, yeah.
Yeah,
I know that
for now.
But it's it's like circuit within circuit. In other words, we are encircuited with them.
Yeah, it's like our training wheels. It's like our training wheels.
Yes, our training wheels, yes.
Right,
exactly.
So we can eventually, eventually if we get Mirage Mind, which would be like a two-wheeler, you know. Then we can go a lot faster than we can on a tricycle.
Well, and maybe we're even more conscious of them and how they work then. You know, maybe we're, you know, because like what we, from our discussion last week, which was really great, by the way, I really loved it. And I thought about it all week, you know, how mind rests, you know, it touches the spirit above and rests. And the material mechanism below it rests delicately in between. And, you know, of either one, we're pretty much wholly unconscious in our lifetime of the material mechanism, which is true, right? We don't really feel our body unless it's in pain. It's interesting, right? We're not aware that our heart is functioning as well as it is, just constant going, and our liver's doing its job, and everything in there is just doing its job. It's wonderful what a great job it does. And we take it for granted. The only way we ever feel it is if something's wrong. And then it's like, something is definitely wrong there.
You know, that's kind of true with in our minds, too, you know, when we're troubled about something, you know.
And so maybe with our Mirantra mind, we really are much more tuned in to the functioning of those seven spirits and how, you know, I feel that. Yeah, you know, you're really in touch now with your intuition, with your courage, with your knowledge, with your, you know, counsel, with your insight.
Well, and we will have 70 sense organs, not just seven.
Right.
Oh, and the next one.
With which to perceive all this.
Right.
Multidimensional. Yeah.
Here's that sentence you're referring to, Paul.
Okay.
Maybe I could just read it because it's very cool. This is in paper 111.15, where they say that human consciousness rests gently upon the electrochemical mechanism below and delicately touches the spirit Narancha energy system above. Of neither of these two systems is the human being ever completely conscious in its mortal life. Therefore, he must work in mind, of which he is conscious.
Right.
And then they point out,
he must work in mind
comprehends as what mind desires to comprehend that ensures survival. It is not so much what mind is like as what mind is striving to be like that constitutes spirit identification. It's like they talk about quality of thinking. You know, that'd be part of that maybe. Striving for higher quality of thinking. Yeah. It is not so much that man is conscious of God as the man yearns for God that results in universe ascension. And then they say, what you are today is not so important as what you're becoming day by day and in eternity.
That's another one of those wall placards, Chuck.
Yeah.
You could paper the wall.
You could paper the walls. Yeah.
Okay, good. I got to remember
we
that.
We could literally paper the wall.
But this comment about the electrochemical mechanism reminds me of what they say about protoplasmic memory.
There you go,
Implying that our memories are actually stored physically. In our brain, which is going to go away. So that's why the adjuster needs to counterpart all the important ones.
And that's why it's so hard to reach for spirit. We are in the, what do you call it? The quicksand of materiality, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, think about
Isn't that true?
About that reach. Think about that reach and how, you know, the origin of that reach goes all the way back to the beginning of animal evolution. And the adjutants, you know, make contact, these evolving organisms, sort of sequentially. I mean, there's a progression of development that's reflected in the adjutants. So the fact that we have connectivity to all seven means that an evolution has taken place that allows the sixth and seventh adjutants to make contact with material mind. Just to me, it's just so like, wow, you got to hand it to the carriers to figure that one out.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, how this electrochemical mechanism, how this protoplasmic thing inside our skull is able to be responsive to mind and spirit ministry. You
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's
Are
so
we
amazing.
Not?
But
you know,
what you're
what
saying about
to me,
that reach, it's an evolutionary reach. Anyway.
Well, in all of this study, from the very beginning of the book, you know, and here we are on paper 9, what occurs to me is how can we ever think that we're not, you know, how is it possible that we think that we're isolated in time and in eternity and that we're not a part of this greater reality, which is God, which is spirit?
Right.
How is it? And all the only conclusion I can come to is because we are, in fact, isolated on this world. There's not been these wonderful agencies to point this out to us all along, which is why we so desperately needed this revelation, right? To point out what is extraordinarily obvious to every other being in the universe who comes from a normal planet.
Well, that's the thing about revelation. You know, once something is revealed, then it can be experienced.
Right.
And that's so
then
true.
It can be
so much. In the Orange Book,
Oh, and it's so frustrating, though. You know, you would think people would jump all over that idea of the greater picture, and they don't. There is
some
unbelievable resistance, even, you know, from from God-loving people. They're not willing. I call it jumping the shark. They don't like to jump the shark.
They got a feeling.
To go to the other side and believe in revelation. It's like, why is that so difficult?
I don't know. I pondered the same thing.
Well, they don't want to be fooled. They don't want to be ridiculed later for believing something that wasn't
true.
Yeah,
and I think, is that the worst thing that can happen to a human? Well,
apparently it is. Why worry?
Yeah, really.
Just go for it. See what happens.
That's the worst thing that can happen, is someone make a fool of you.
Pride before the spring, pride before the summer, pride before the fall, all year long.
Yeah.
Well, and then even that term, Pam, jumping the shark, it means that you get ahead of the shark, then he's liable to eat you, right? So, fear. It's fear that stops us from contemplation of these vast imponderables. And each one of us has experienced that in the church with the church elders. When you're a little kid, you say, but why is it that way? Well, we don't know that. That's your faith. You can't ask
those
questions.
Yeah, that's where faith comes in.
We can't ask them.
Jesus gave us permission to ask those questions. So we can ask those questions if we want.
Yes,
we can.
Right.
And
how often, did he talk about wineskins bursting,
Right.
It's like, there's our model right there, If the Urantia book isn't a new wineskin, then what is a wineskin?
The old things are passing away. That's another thing he said. All things are becoming new. Okay, so the old things are passing away. We see that. We can experience it. We live it every day. Why do we have such a hard time believing that only that which is old is good and true?
That
God has nothing to say to us. Really? In this particular time and day and age, God has nothing to say when we need him the most? He has nothing to say. I never did believe that. Not since I was a child. So there's something about, when you start to ask those questions and you start to contemplate greater realities that leads you on. And it just keeps leading you. I remember thinking as a kid, why did God only talk to the men of biblical times? Why doesn't he still talk to us?
Exactly.
Do we not need him?
Exactly. Yeah.
Were they the only ones worthy of his words and wisdom? Are we not worthy?
Right.
Well,
of course we are.
That.
Well,
the whole thrust of was it the first or second discourse, he really bears down on that. With the sayings of these people, there might be value there. But what about now? What about you? Why don't you be a prophet? Why don't you discover new truth?
You do well to quote the prophets of old, but you would do better to become as living prophets in your own right.
Exactly.
What a concept.
Yeah, I love that.
That he would empower us that way.
Uh-huh.
I think of Shakespeare saying, what a piece of work is man. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form and mowing, how express and admirable in action, how like an angel in apprehension, how like a god. Even Shakespeare knew it, right? The beauty of the world,
really?
The paragon of animals.
Beautiful.
Here we are with all of these tremendous gifts of mind and intellect and spirit and value and meaning and all of this to be explored and to be contemplated and to be enjoyed. I think there's a place in the book that's developed. Really, figured out, reasoned out. Let's reason it out. If this is true, then therefore, this must also be true. If God is omnipresent, therefore, God is everywhere present. Whither can I go where you are not? You know, so mm-hmm. why on earth would we ever believe that somebody else is not beloved of God? Someone else is not worthy of God. Well, are they not in God? Is God not in them?
Yep.
How
That's
can
right.
we rationalize that then?
Yeah, how can we exclude? Yes. Yes.
How can we exclude anything, even plants and animals?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm an omnivore, and I fully understand that some animal gave its life for me to ingest mm-hmm. this particular piece of chicken or meat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm appreciative of that gift.
Mm-hmm.
You
well,
know,
yeah.
I appreciate
all those proteins
that.
Have been prepared. Been prepared.
Right. I try to be mindful of that, you know, of that,
right.
what was given.
Right. All
and,
right.
you know.
Gratitude.
Yeah. I read a really important book for me was a little book called The Mutant Message. Have you guys ever read that?
Oh, mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
No.
It's about a woman who went to Australia and she realized that they didn't have window screens. And so she decided she was going to move there and help them develop that. You know, something as simple as a window screen so they could open their windows in the summer and not worry about insects flying in. That she created a factory and she hired mostly Aboriginals. And she learned more from them than they ever learned from her. And but they honored her wisdom and they honored her loving nature that she was willing to let them rise to their own occasion, you know, which is something they do. They decide, okay, this is the job I'm good at and this is the job I'll do. And she honored that in them. She said it was actually remarkable to see how well that functioned, that they all kind of rose to their own best abilities. And to honor her, they took her on a walkabout, which was a very sacred thing for them. And she didn't realize that's what they were going to do. They invited her, and she came all dressed up in heels and everything. And then they took off into the back, out back. And here she was on a walkabout with them. And they told her, no, this is a great honor. We're going to take you to places that no other humans have ever seen. And, you know, her heels eventually broke off, you know. And she, you know, it's about her journey, though, which is really remarkable. And she said, as they go along, they always have absolute faith that the universe will provide whatever their needs are. And when that provision comes into their space, their gratitude is, you know, just they're so grateful for it. And they thank that thing for giving its life that they might sustain their own. And, you know, I just that one thing. I mean, the book is really just packed full of native wisdom.
Forgot about that. That's a while ago. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Which book is that again?
It's called The Mutant Message.
Message.
The Mutant Message, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just really an amazing story. It's an amazing story. You know, you wonder if, did this really happen? But I've seen her. I've you know, she's done the talk circuit, and I saw one of her lectures, and it's really quite a story, and I think she's absolutely sincere. It really did happen. And they gave her a message, which was their mutant message. And I wouldn't tell you what it was in case you ever want to read the book. It's really quite powerful. But at one point she asked them, you know, she spends hours with them sitting around a campfire, and she asked them, what do you all think of Jesus? And their response was, oh, Jesus, yes, he's our most elder brother in the universe.
Oh, wow.
I just
love
that answer, you know.
Wow. That's great.
From these Aborigines, you know. Oh, yes, he's our most elder brother.
No.
You know, it's amazing what humans come to when they're connected to the elements and you know, mm-hmm. and free to contemplate the reality of the beauty and goodness and spirit that's all around them without anybody interfering with that, you know, what the human mind comes to.
Exactly.
It's pretty extraordinary. But yeah, that's a good one if you ever want to read it. Quick read, easy, amazing story that she tells.
Well, you think about everything that's going on with that, you know, sort of the mechanics, human mind and realization and experience. And that it's interesting sometimes to look at the quote from here and a quote from there, you know, and see how they correlate, sort of go together in surprising ways maybe. So, you know, taking that one thing we just read about how human consciousness rests gently upon the electrochemical mechanism below and delicately touches the spirit Maranatha system above. Okay, just sort of holding that in mind. In mind, right?
Hold it in mind. That's a good one.
Over in paper 101, which is, again, one of the religion papers, 101.64, then they say this, which makes a lot more sense as I hold that other statement, you know, in mind, so to speak. This is where they say that the evolutionary type of knowledge is but the accumulation of protoplasmic memory material, meaning that it's on the level below, right?
The protoplasmic memory material.
Memory is in that electrochemical mechanism below. Right.
Right.
And then they say, this is the most primitive form of creature consciousness. So implying that it's electrochemical and based on protoplasmic memory. But then they go on to say that wisdom embraces the ideas formulated from protoplasmic memory in process of association and recombination. And such phenomena differentiate human mind from mere animal mind. Animals have knowledge, but only man possesses wisdom capacity. Truth is made accessible to the wisdom-endowed individual by the bestowal on such a mind of the spirits of the Father and the Son, the thought adjuster and the spirit of truth. So our capacity to formulate wisdom embraces ideas formulated from protoplasmic memory. So that's where the departure from the purely electrochemical mechanism begins to happen. You know, that, okay, we have this protoplasmic memory, this electrochemical mechanism, but that's sort of like the foundation for mind, which entails intellect and thought, as we were just saying. So that's they're describing here as formulating ideas from protoplasmic memory, okay? So ideas are on a higher level than what they're describing here as protoplasmic memory or electrochemical mind function. So once we're in the realm of ideas, we're sort of lifting off of the material mechanism into mind. You know, mind is different. You know, it's a different realm of functionality from the electrochemical basis for all of that. So that's when we begin to have a memory in process of association and recombination. So we can, I remember that. I'm going to recombine this and see what I come up with in terms of an insight or a realization, you know, and that's going on in the mind. And so we have this, we're in this position that's kind of, well, I guess it's unique to this lifetime, but where we're dependent on a physical mechanism, while at the same time we're engaging a higher mechanism.
Yes, yes.
Right.
And getting those to work together because it's kind of I don't know how true this is. I think it's kind of true, at least sometimes, that our ability to think grows. You know, we become better at understanding things.
Yeah.
And that's all going on in the mind.
Right?
Meanwhile, but meanwhile, we're dependent on this protoplasmic level that, you know, kind of maybe begins to deteriorate a little bit as we get older. Who knows? You know, it depends. But,
but then it's supposed to. We're supposed to disengage with that. That's the process we're in, right?
And we will.
We're in a process of disengaging,
Right. But keeping it functioning as well as possible in the meantime. This is,
yes,
a worthy,
absolutely.
You know,
so it gets you
about.
As far down the road as it can get you, right? Or as far up in that into that level of, you know, spirit as it can get you, you know, because it is indeed the gateway there too. You know, your point about how the book reiterates what it's already taught you is so important, and I find that Jesus also has something to say on almost everything that's touched in the first couple of parts of the book. And what you were just saying, Chuck, reminded me of this great episode with Jesus and Ganon. And this is from paper 132.8. It says, that afternoon, Jesus and Ganon had both enjoyed playing with a very intelligent shepherd dog. And Ganon wanted to know whether the dog had a soul, whether it had a will. And in response to his questions, Jesus said, the dog has a mind. The dog has a mind which can know material man, his master, but cannot know God, who is spirit. Therefore, the dog does not possess a spiritual nature and cannot enjoy a spiritual experience. The dog may have will derived from nature and augmented by training, but such a power of mind is not a spiritual force. Neither is it comparable to the human will, inasmuch as it is not reflective. It is not the result of discriminating higher and moral meanings or choosing spiritual and eternal values. It is the possession of such powers of spiritual discrimination and truth, choosing, that makes mortal man a moral being, a creature endowed with the attributes of spiritual responsibility and the potential of eternal survival. Jesus went on to explain that it is the absence of such mental powers in the animal which makes it forever impossible for the animal world to develop language in time or to experience anything equivalent to personality survival in eternity. As a result of this day's instruction, Ganon never again entertained belief in the transmigration of the souls of men into the bodies of animals. And, you know, while that's a hard teaching, I guess, you know, I mean, we could say, because we love our animals so much. We love our dogs, especially, so much, because they give us so much. But dogs are a continuing agency for humanity, and they do go on, you know, on this world, and they will be, humans will be loving dogs, I hope, forever, you know. So in that respect, they are a continuing agency. But I think Jesus explains it so well, right? What we've been talking about. He just explains for Ganon so well.
Well, you know, I cannot help but think that the Spornagia have something to do with our animals living on. I just have this sense. Because I'm holding out for that. Because we cannot love that deeply and not have it continue on somehow, you know, in their own personality or whatever. So I'm just, there's going to be compensation on some level for that. Because our God is good.
Our God is good, and our mother, Divine Mother is good. And every time I sit with my little dog on my lap, I thank her for that gift of that precious little furry being. That, you know, they may not know any more than it's time to eat, you know, and let's go on a walk. but
what
that's
was the reference
fine
song
for me.
For that?
That's what paper 132.8.
Yes, I put it on.
There's a really interesting nugget in there. 132.8. paper 132. I only see seven sections.
What? No, 130.
130.
130. Section two, paragraph eight. Yeah.
I got it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this one, Jesus, there's something Jesus says here that I think is really intriguing. Where is it? It's kind of down in the middle of that paragraph. They say, the dog may have a will derived from nature and augmented by training.
Oh.
But such a power of mind is not a spiritual force, et cetera, and is not comparable to the human will. So when I first read that, I was thinking, wow, because I tend to associate will with personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that these animals don't have personality in the sense that, you know, human personality or on up above.
Yeah.
Here he's saying that they do have a, what did he say again? Let's see how he qualifies it. The dog may have a will derived from nature and augmented by training. Okay, so I started thinking about that, and then I started thinking about our cat, you know, and watching our cat.
Right.
And he's full of will.
Mr. Kitty.
You know, like he decides to go this way or decides to go that way.
He knows
or
what he wants.
Or he wants to go outside, and he starts scratching at the door or whatever. He wants to come, you know, hang around with his humans. Yeah.
Yes.
There's definitely a will functioning there in dogs. It's in spades, you know.
Yeah.
We see that. And, you know, with dogs especially, they can be so affectionate. And, you know, there's a will behind that as well.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what mm-hmm. we love about our pets is that they can be not just intriguing, peculiar and funny and everything else, but they can actually be loving as well, or what feels
right.
mm-hmm. love, you know.
Yes.
And that is understanding that their adjutants are a level of consciousness of the mother spirit, that's a
yes.
love that's coming from her.
Uh-huh. Which is why I thank her.
Yeah.
I never thought of it
yeah.
that way, Chuck, but I always thank her for them.
Yeah. Well, that's a good reason to thank her for that
yeah.
because that's
yeah.
actually her. In a way, that's
yeah,
well,
that's actually her.
Manifested
that's so
through
true.
Those adjutants, through those first five adjutants, which you can go a long way on five adjutants. You know.
Well,
know.
And look,
yeah.
we can't even begin to think of what animals have been doing for the evolution of humanity.
Forever.
It's just been amazing how more
it
and
is.
More people have dogs. More and more people
yeah.
have animals, and they're learning to be nurturers to these animals.
Yeah,
and
right.
the mm-hmm. love is being exchanged. So evolution is definitely taking place with this.
There's a civilizing influence.
True.
Civilizing influence. Yes.
Right. I never
yeah.
thought of that, but I think. But you're right. Yeah, you have a. I mean, having
oh, thank
children,
God. Thank
of
God.
Course.
Thank God for animals.
But that, yeah.
You know,
well, and they also
you've
help
heard,
a lot of people not to be so lonely.
Yes,
they might
right.
You know,
otherwise.
I've heard stories
yep.
recently about how they're incorporating them into schools and how when they bring them into schools and they have like a mascot in a school that is an actual dog and all the students can pet it and love it, the incidence of human violence or you know, antagonism
great.
Goes down.
Yeah, that's
and,
amazing.
And in
that's
nursing
wonderful.
Homes. They give
oh, yes.
people comfort, you know. So here it is.
Uh-huh.
It is a gift from the mother. They are a gift from her.
Oh, yes.
And any time that we get – yeah. Oh, yeah.
People
have
therapy.
This – yeah. That's amazing to me because I have always found horses to be therapeutic to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when I would walk into the corral, one of my first jobs between the time I was 12 and 16, for 4 years I worked at a stable. They had 50 head of horses. I would walk in the middle of them and derive so much benefit from just being in their presence.
Wow.
And, you know, they would come over to me and nudge me and nuzzle me and love me. And it was
yes.
just such a beautiful
yes.
thing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade that experience for anything in the world. That was a
yeah.
wonderful experience in my life, being
oh,
with those
yes.
horses every day.
So when Jesus talks about this, their will, you know, which you were feeling, even, you know, the will derived from nature which we can experience with animals, that has to, you have to be talking about the adjutant spirits. The urges,
mm-hmm, right.
The adjutant urges are what sort of produce that. You know, like the fifth adjutant, the spirit of counsel, you know, is sort of the social urge that makes animals want to be
right.
social, even with humans. Even with
right.
humans.
Wasn't it interesting
that yeah.
when they characterized us as a herd? During
where
COVID.
Was that? Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah. During COVID, they said herd immunity. Well, we are herd animals.
Oh, herd immunity.
You know, I was thinking
right,
yeah, right.
yes.
We have those instincts too. You know, we
herd
are
instincts.
Animals after
yeah.
all. Yeah. Sorry, Chuck. I didn't mean to derail
yeah, no,
your
that
thought
was all.
There.
No, that was pretty much it.
You know, the way I've explained this to people who've asked me, because people take issue with this idea that, you know, that dogs don't live forever or go on forever, which I think they do as a human agency, as an agency on this planet, I think.
Well,
the equivalent of pets.
On.
Yeah, right. Pets
there,
will always be
always
with
be more
us.
Dogs, you know, in that.
Right.
You know.
That's the way
just
I look at
those.
It. But. Mm-hmm. I was explaining to a guy one time, you know, he was telling me how beautiful his little dog is. And I said, you know, I know that. I know they're beautiful and they're wonderful, but they're not able to reason like we are. And he said, well, give me an example of that. I said, okay, so you're at work at your office. You know, I asked him, I said, where do you work? He said, I sit in my office and I have a sliding glass door. And when my little dog wants in, she comes and scratches the door. I said, okay, here's the difference between your dog and a human. A human might come and knock on the door and look in there and see you're working and then knock again and say, oh, he's working. He's busy right now. I'll come back later because I don't want to disturb him. That's a human idea. A dog will never think that. A dog will just
That's
sit
right.
and scratch at the door all day until you finally get up and let him in, right? Because that's what he knows. He knows what he needs. He needs in.
Right.
He doesn't care if
yes.
it's an inconvenience to you.
No, no.
You're not part
no.
of the equation.
No.
And the guy
that's
really
a,
did get
good.
That. He had to concede
he did,
that
he did
point.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's, that maybe that's what Jesus is talking about here when he says that with the dog, this power of the sort of will that they have is not reflective. Not reflective.
It's not reflective.
the capacity for reflective thought.
Right.
Something to do with this distinction.
Right. A human can reflect on meanings and values and moral ideas and say, wow, maybe it's not
right.
a good time right now. I'll come back later. You know,
yeah.
I will
yeah.
honor, yeah, I will honor your needs in this situation, not just my own.
Right.
But an animal
wouldn't
think about that. They think,
well,
I need in.
Well, it's interesting, though, that Jesus does say you may have a will derived from nature and augmented by training. So it is
augmented,
possible to
right.
train a dog, you know, you scratch twice and I don't answer and go lay down, you know, or something like that. You know, sometimes you can use training to extend the mind capacity of the animal.
That loop of the animal mind that just determines
what it wants. Right, this functioning of the will derived from nature.
Right.
You know, can be augmented by training. And it's amazing to see what animals can do that have been trained to do things.
Oh, my
gosh. It's just like crazy, you know. You see these... You
but
know,
they are
like
trained by rewards, right? That's pretty basic.
Yeah.
You give them something in return.
yeah, right.
Then,
yeah, I actually saw this is real. On, I don't know what it was. I guess it was on Instagram, but where there was this place, and I don't know if this is real or not. It looked real. But this place where they're training dogs to drive.
Oh.
So they rigged up this special way for a dog to sit. And you know, they have the equivalent of pedals and a steering wheel, and it takes about a month in this artificial
to train
environment
them.
To train a dog.
Oh, wow.
Only a month.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
Subaru,
I
would say that Subaru has it down. They've done it, But we're down. We have less than a minute to go. It always goes by so fast. You know, thank you for this great conversation on mind. Because mind is amazing.
Yeah.
And we'll go on next week. We'll continue on with this discussion on mind.
Yes.
Because we're up with mind gravity. Woo-hoo.
And
so.
Soon reflectivity. Yes.
Yeah. So we've touched on these. So I hope you enjoyed it, friends. Thank you for listening. Thanks, guys, for coming on the board. We love you so much, Isadora, Bob, Gary. We love seeing you. It does our hearts good to see you. And we know it's springtime. You might want to be out planting flowers, but you're listening to us, and we appreciate it. And thanks to all of our listeners on the archive. And thank you, Pam. And thank you, Chuck. It's always great to be with you.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Of a Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Contemplate
so
these wonderful things.
Yes.
Indeed.
All right.
Okay, my friend.
Love you. And
so we're off next
love
week,
you
right?
Too. Yeah, we're off next week. So we'll be back the week after that.
Okay. Happy Mother's Day.
Great. Look forward to
Happy
it.
Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Okay.
All
love
right.
you both.
Bye. Love you. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.